Yo, we are here for another episode of Mai Tai Happy Hour.
I love it. I love the energy you're bringing tonight.
I'm so here for this. You know, I had a four-day weekend, nice long weekend, got to see friends. Really cold outside. I had to hang the Christmas lights in, like, subarctic wind. We did not do the second story.
You know the best part about living in an apartment is when you hang your Christmas lights, you are indoors, shielded from the elements.
Oh, buddy, it was. I was like, can I get on the roof? And I got on the roof to hang the wreath, and I'm like, almost blew over. I'm like, fuck this. And the whole weekend was gonna be the same weather, so I'm like, I'm not gonna have another time to do it. Like, I am a firm believer in the you hang your Christmas lights, you don't turn them on, but you hang them up when you pull down your Halloween lights. It's usually still warm outside, but nope, I had to go on vacation, and this was the first chance I had to put things up, and it was so cold. It's cold today. It's so cold. It's cold, people. And that's where we're at right now. We're in a cold basement. I have air fresheners now, though, for you, and I have smell purifiers, and I don't know what else I'm saying. I'm babbling. It's an episode.
You're so good to me, buddy.
It's so good. What do we have in store for everybody this week?
Well, big news, I made my first trip back to the movie theaters, and it was going to take something like Ghostbusters Afterlife to get me off the bench, so I finally went to see a movie in a theater, Ghostbusters Afterlife. We're going to talk about that. Hawkeye dropped on Disney Plus right before Thanksgiving, first two episodes, so we've got a first look at that. Chucky is back. Chucky's back on the Sci-Fi Channel, and they have a whole new series about to hit the season finale. We just started watching it, so we're going to give you a little first thought on that, and then I'm going to watch it, and then we're going to talk about it later. And then finally, George challenged me to give Venom another chance, and I watched Venom Let There Be Carnage, and I loved it, and we've definitely got some thoughts about that.
Did you watch the first Venom first again?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you really did it. You did, like, double header. But first, cocktail us.
So I cannot, no longer in good conscience, teach people how to make the Ecto Cooler that I used to make. This is banned at three parties. So I went with something called Mutant Slime from the tipsybartender.com, which is close enough for rock and roll, but it's not my special recipe. So this is going to be an ounce of melon liqueur or Midori, an ounce of triple sec, an ounce of sweet and sour, and it's going to take Mountain Dew. So what you're going to do is you're going to put a rocks glass full of ice, preferably being chunky. You're going to put ice in a shaker, and you're going to mix the melon liqueur, the triple sec, and the sweet and sour. You're going to shake it, and as you're pouring it in by straining onto the glass, you're going to top it off with some Mountain Dew, the original Mountain Dew, none of those, like, weird gamer colors that they have. It'll turn a radiant green, and you will probably pucker your lips because it's so sweet, the Mutant Slime.
The Mutant Slime. I'm ready for it. I'm here for it. I loved Ecto Cooler, even though it was basically just green orange drink. But
I know now I'm an influencer. I accept that in my life, but I'm not a big enough influencer that I could have gotten Ecto Cooler from Hi-C, and I really wanted it.
No, it's challenging. I know it's out there. I just don't know where to get it.
Well, they don't sell it in stores. They just did a limited release to influencers because of Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I mean, you can't even get us into, like, movies with review passes. So I don't have faith in you getting that to cooler.
But I'm like a baby influencer. I'm new at it.
Hopefully, maybe by episode 500, you'll finally get a swag. But in the meantime, it is that time of year. It is time for Miracle and Sippin' Santa. Last year, we couldn't really do it because of everything going on. We had to pretty much curbside order everything. This year, it is back. Sippin' Santa is at the Vanguard in Harrison, and the other local ones are all the Scopos hospitality restaurants. So we went to Gus's Last Stand. Is that the name of the place?
That's a new place,
In Westwood, I think. I don't know what the name of that town is. One of those towns. They are doing Miracle. Also, Cowan's Pub and Nutley's doing Miracle. And the Franklin Social's doing Miracle. So Miracle is more of a traditional Santa threw up all over the place. Like Christmas threw up in a room, and it's just so much awesome Christmas fun, love, awesomeness. They have the Tyrannosaurus Rex tiki mug.
I love it.
And all that fun stuff. Sippin' Santa is more of like if Tiki met Santa and they had like a child and it was like that. And they have a lot more Tiki drinks. But they have the Santa Claus as a Merman mug, which I need to get. So we went to the Miracle this week. Next week we'll probably go to Sippin' Santa. This is the time to go show up for your favorite bars and do something fun and cool. And if you live in an area with no Tiki bars like we do, this is the closest thing you're going to get to it. So definitely if you're in North Jersey, the Vanguard is the place to go. And again, can't recommend it any more than that. And I, too, also returned to the movie theaters a week ago and got to see Ghostbusters Afterlife. And I'm very, very happy I did so. I don't know if I could say that it was like a big movie experience, theater experience. I mean, this wasn't like a Marvel movie like an Eternals or a Spider-Man, but I didn't want to wait to see it. That was pretty much the case for me. I was like, I need to experience this now. I don't want everyone to get all the feels, not to wait for it. I had a little bit of FOMO. We went to Carousotes in Secaucus, which is a little bit, it's got some issues. I mean, AMC's gotten the money, that infusion of all that stock, so they can keep it up. Poor Carousotes. Seats are a little worn, but at least it felt safe, and they had really cool kiosks to order food. But I went, I saw Ghostbusters Afterlife. I understand some of the complaints critics have, but at the end of the day, this is a fan movie for fan service to give you all the feels, and I loved it. What did you think, John?
Well, first I want to say I am so happy that we both got to go back to the theaters, and yes, AMC got the cash influx. Yo, last year was tough, and it was tough on Carousotes as well, so hopefully they will return one day to their former glory. We might be going to see Spider-Man there when after Spider-Man opens up a little ways down. People are actually, I don't know, a little sidebar here quick. People are selling tickets to Spider-Man opening night for like thousands of dollars, which is bonkers to me. So I loved it. And I will tell you, this is not a movie for critics.
Well, it's also not a movie for people who didn't love and grow up and appreciate Ghostbusters from what it was from the beginning.
So in a lot of ways, this movie deals with grief. Right. And I think that it really does speak to a lot of older fans of different kinds of fandom and different kinds of things like Star Wars and everything else. Like, I think this movie is really about letting go and being able to accept the torch being passed on to a new generation. Because, like, I mean, let's face it, like, this is a big ticket item for Sony. Like, a franchise like this could be printing money on a regular basis, and it's just sitting there on the shelves, because the last time they pulled it off with the dude who made Bridesmaids, and it went over like a steel fart in church. So I think this movie is very special, and it's special in the way that Episode 7, The Force Awakens, was special, because it really does say, hey, this is the old world, we acknowledge it, but now we have to move away from that in order for the franchise as a whole to survive and thrive and grow. And that's what this was. Ghostbusters Afterlife is the Episode 7 of the Ghostbusters franchise, and it is just fan service. Like, they remake the first Ghostbusters movie. For all intents and purposes, if you've seen Ghostbusters, you know the plot of Ghostbusters Afterlife with some tweaks and a different ending.
Yeah, I mean, it's Ghostbusters in Kentucky, I think it's Kentucky, right?
Oklahoma.
I mean, come on, a little bit of here, a little bit there. You're right. I mean, this is the story of a family who, goes out to find. We've seen it before. It's the story of a family who had a kind of a long lost relative, a person who's kind of like left their life a little bit. And, you know, it's what I'm expecting to have to do with Uncle Pete in New Hampshire when he finally kicks the bucket and I've got to go clean out his double wide. And I'm fully expecting to be, you know, I'm pretty much going to burn it down is what I'm going to do. But these people, they go and they unearth, a whole lot of excitement and fun that we're not going to spoil. But it is a very much coming-of-age story. I felt like this was more like Goonies than Ghostbusters. Did you get that feeling?
I did. I think that's a really great comparison, because when I talked to people about it after I saw it, I said it's very much in the vein of Amblin Entertainment. So it does not feel like a Ghostbusters movie, insofar as if you've seen Ghostbusters, seen Ghostbusters 2, you know how these movies are shot, you know how these movies are paced. This feels more Spielbergian in every single way, to the point where like some shots you would swear coming like straight out of like old Spielberg movies. And, you know, it does really deal with kids. So there's nothing better to put it over the plate with than Amblin Entertainment. Right.
Yep. And look, the fact is the first and second Ghostbusters, I mean, the main characters we're talking about, four crotchety, you know, middle-aged guy, is like, it was that type of humor. This is definitely, you couldn't really capture that in a bottle gun. They tried with women, and they tried with funny women, but it just didn't work right. And I feel like that probably would not work again today. I think the angle they took on this, which was more the Stranger Things type of angle, worked. And it worked great. It helped that they had amazing actors across the board. The nostalgia was there. They got you in the guts with a gimmick at the end that works, even though it's an obvious gimmick to get your tears going. I mean, and I think the funniest thing that you said before is about it being very similar to the first one. My wife turned to me at the end of the movie and she was just like covered in tears. And she's like, "We just basically saw the first movie again, right?" I'm like, "Yes." And I'm like, "And I'm giving them this one. They've got their, you know, they get it all out there. I want the next one to be like all new, all exciting." And it looks like they're going that route. I mean, I'm not spoiling anything, but there are two stingers at the end. So stay through all the way to the end.
I will say that they are two of the best stingers they have ever made at the end of movies. Like, perfectly, pitch perfect for Ghostbusters. And also, like, if they move the story along, there is a clear way to go. And, dude, to be very honest with you, I think that the main failure of the Melissa McCarthy Ghostbusters is they try to do their own thing and try to remake Ghostbusters and not acknowledge one of the greatest movies of all time. And that's why a lot of fans really took a big old dump on it. However, I think that that movie, because it failed, it had to fail so this movie could fly. Because there are a lot of old fans who probably never would have given a movie like this a shot if they had not been like, wow, anything's got to be better than that.
Yeah, but the problem with the previous one, and people forget, is that it just wasn't funny. It tried to be a straight-up comedy. Even though the first Ghostbusters, I think a lot of people have this weird like recollection of it. The first Ghostbusters movie was not a comedy. It was really kind of a, like, you know, a not so scary horror movie that had funny moments. It's almost like the modern satire horror that's kind of become popular right now. I don't want to call it comedy horror, but, you know, it's got its yucks, but at the end of the day, it's still spooky. And people keep, just because there's comedians in it doesn't mean that it's funny. Most of the jokes in the first Ghostbusters were dry and more like just like, oh shit, the situation we're in type jokes. And what they did with the last one was they tried to make it a comedy, and it just wasn't funny. It just didn't work. It like missed on so many levels. And it, you know, I watched that movie hoping that maybe it was just assholes shitting on the Me Too movement or something like that, and it just wasn't very good.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't really get it. And I mean, I enjoyed it, it was fine, but it wasn't a Ghostbusters movie. And, you know, to your point, the actual dryness, like, I remember, like, when I was like younger, and, you know, the Saturday Night Live, Chris Farley era Saturday Night Live was on, Adam Sandler, all those people were on Saturday Night Live, and I was like, oh man, you should go back and watch like the original Saturday Night Live. That was really funny. That was really great. And you go back and watch the original SNL, and it's fucking terrible because it's all dry humor. It's all very, like, you know, pretentious, dry humor. And I think that's what made the first Ghostbusters work, because you're right, it is a very, like, supernatural. It's a very paranormal movie. It's serious to a degree, but the dry humor really works for it, and the delivery of that humor really works for it.
Mm-hmm. No, and this movie is none of any of that. This movie is very much a coming of age story. It is a drama. It is a story of, again, a family trying to get over grief. And the comedy is more kids comedy. I mean, the general, it's dad jokes, and that's kind of what they're going after. And I get it. And people who want this to be a comedy, like what they remember Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd being like, they're not getting that here either. Instead, we just have a really, really good, touching movie that hits all the right notes. I honestly could have lived without so much of the echoing of the first one. I the problem with me was I had a narrative in my head that I think would have been better, which is what I think a lot of people thought was going to be, which is that Venkman, you know, what do you do with all these ghosts that you have in New York in this containment unit? How do you dispose of them?
Like, you're going to fly for sting.
I mean, that's it. Realistically, the way you do it is you bury them in the fucking desert in the middle of nowhere on a farm. And that would have been the smart move. And they went with a sideways plot that was more of what the original was like. Basically, they recreated the original. And I think that was the only thing that was a bummer, was there was very easy ways to do this without having to pretty much clone it. But again, I didn't care because it's just so much fun.
It's and a just passing of the torch, man.
Seeing them with the car, seeing them with the, you know, I could have lived without the fake Slimer. I wonder if they lost the rights. I mean, the name actually, you know, the name Slimer might actually be owned by someone else now. I was curious why they used a different ghost. But
I think that was just so it has its own thing. Like, that's really all it was. So like,
at this point, when you're doing that much similar, who cares if you pop with Slimer?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but I'm gonna Google it. Now when we get off the show, I'm going to fucking Google it. Cause now I want to know.
What happened to Slimer? Maybe Slimer died. I have no recollection of the second Ghostbusters at all. Like, nothing. I can't tell you a single thing about the second Ghostbusters movie.
Well, it's good that they're passing the torch, though, because Ernie Hudson is 75 years old. The other dudes are, like, right behind him. So it needed to be done. And this, I think, was the most respectful way to do it for the fans.
I thought you were going to go and tell me what Ghostbusters 2 was. You completely, like, steered this the other way.
Well, Ghostbusters 2 is kind of maybe will they, won't they in or out of canon at this point. But yeah, Ghostbusters 2 was the one where they had the mood slime under Manhattan and the Vigo painting.
Oh, the Vigo painting. I remember the Vigo painting. That's all I remember about that. It was the same Ernie, right? Did anyone get switched out?
No. It was all the same dudes.
I might be confusing it with the cartoon. I just remember something was weird on one of those. Regardless, I think everyone out there, do yourself a favor. If you love Ghostbusters, if you're nostalgic for Ghostbusters, go see it. If you didn't love Ghostbusters, if it wasn't your thing, if you're new to Ghostbusters, maybe wait to see it on demand. Regardless, it is fun. It is exciting. It is something different. And, you know, you get to see them, like, blow up a town, this small town in Kentucky, Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
And now next I'm going to see Spider-Man.
Me too.
I'm also not fighting for opening weekend ticket. I don't understand why anybody would fight for that. I usually go to my Christmas movie the night before Christmas or right around there, the Sunday before Christmas. So I will be seeing it around then. I am very, very excited to see how this goes, and especially after seeing Venom 2 this week. So definitely excited about that. But as far as superhero stuff goes, this week it was all about Hawkeye.
Oh, very exciting.
I am a huge fan of the Matt Faction Hawkeye series. I have the Omnibus. I've been recently rereading it. I love that story so much. It's a much darker, depressing Hawkeye story, and it is a very self-contained story. They are, in this case, trying to bust it out of that self-contained mold and merge it into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is the Cliff Barton we've grown to love in the MCU. Love him or hate him, I can go either way with Hawkeye in the MCU. But this is a lot of people thought this series was going to take place during the blip. Like, this is going to be the dark, explain the dark, depressing period when his family completely disappeared, when Thanos snapped his finger. But it does not. It takes place today. He has a family. He's not quite depressed as much as he was in the comic books. But it still gets from point A to point B and hits all the jokes. Bro.
Bro, you messed up, bro. So, I really enjoyed it. The Matt Fraction run could possibly be one of my top five favorite comic runs of all time. Like, every time I look back on it, every time I read it again, I feel good about it. I think it's such a creative, David Aja's art, so creative, so really, like, smart in the storytelling. And I too thought, like, well, how are they going to do this in the MCU? Well, they got 5 years where he was just dicking around. They could totally do, like, shot for shot, the Matt Fraction run.
Yeah.
However, they decided to go in a different direction. They decided to go after the snap, which is fine. And now they're doing it. And obviously they're doing it in a way where they can kind of set up like a Young Avengers, or they could pass the torch, because who knows how long Jeremy Renner is going to want to play Hawkeye. And they took a lot of themes and a lot of the notes from the Matt Fraction run. And then they went their own way with it. And I think it's okay. I definitely would have preferred them doing straight up during the snap, but I really enjoyed this. And really, it's all about Kate Bishop. It's Kate Bishop's story, and Hawkeye's just there to kind of hang out.
To be fair, I don't know how much Disney would have wanted to do a full-on, like, alcoholic depression story. Like, I think that, and again, I think this touches a lot of the what people are saying, that this does have feelings, vibes of the Netflix series, The Punisher, Daredevil, Iron Fist, Jessica Jones. It feels like that, partially because it's in New York, a lot of it's shot at night, but I just don't think it could have it just would have been too dark if they went the route they went in the comic books. But it doesn't really affect the overall story at all. I mean, you have the pizza dog, you have Kate Bishop, you have the what did it call the not the hold on hold track on stop stop mafia. Oh come on, I wanted to get it. I just kept going trench coat mafia. It's the tracksuit mafia, a whole bunch of super. Am I allowed to say Guido now? Did we say I can say it now on the show? I believe.
Yeah, but they're not Italian. They're Russian.
They're Russian, but they are. They have the whole. So it's Russian Guidos. I mean, full on, right up the like. It's like the Greedos, the Greek guys with the hair slicked back and the tracksuits. I don't know. Have I ever used that joke before? Like, that's what I call them.
No, but now it's forever.
Oh, Greedos are real. Like, it's the Greek, like, you know, it is what it is. But they are. It's all in there. The jokes land. I'm curious to see where they go with the bad guy. They are, you know, you're feeling hints of the Kingpin. You're feeling it. I don't know. I hope so. I hope they don't let us down. They keep talking about the head mafia boss. I really, really hope they go the route we think they're going.
I think if we get anything, we just get the long shot of the Kingpin at the very end, so you know he's there. You know, like, but I think, I don't know. It's only six episodes, too, which I thought was interesting. Like, I think I like that they're sticking with that, like, 6 to 8 episodes storytelling format. I love that they gave us 2 up front. I love that on Christmas Day, I get to watch the last episode with Sally. I'm very excited about it. I really love the person that got to play Kate Bishop. And it's fun. It's just a fun show.
Can we admit that Vera Farmiga and Carrie Coons have pretty much become the go-to mom characters on everything? Just everything.
I'm good with it.
Like, that's basically it. Carrie Coons and Ghostbusters, she was tremendous. Vera Farmiga, I love that she's playing a little, you know, like this rich, snobby mom. I like the route they're going there. I love Tony Dalton as Jack DeQuisk. The swordsman, is that his name in the comic books? The swordsman?
I think it's the swordsman, yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's in there. This is so good. The acting's fantastic. The action is excellent. I love that, like, unlike Snake Eyes, where, like, we have no idea how Snake Eyes becomes this, like, ninja-type character, you know, they make it clear that she is, Kate Bishop is an Olympic-level, like, archer gymnastic person. So you understand why she's really good at doing what she does. She was also inspired by Hawkeye when she saw him during the first Avengers
Battle of New York.
The Battle of New York, which, by the way, I don't know if you saw Twitter, of course Twitter would do it, found the original footage and put it side by side with the new footage to show just how, like, how well they did it, how perfectly they did it. It's not just using the old footage. They just shot it from a different angle. So, man, cool.
You know, say what you will about, like, when they gave it the old college dropout try with, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC and all these other shows, like, the amount of money that they put into the shows that they put on Disney Plus and the quality of show that you get when you put that money into a show, it's stark. Like, yo, the Netflix shows, I think the Netflix shows, as they were meant to be on a very ground level of New York and those kind of characters, can kind of go sort of side by side ish to the stuff that they're doing uptown with the Disney Plus. But man, when you look at, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. versus what they just did in, like, one episode of Hawkeye, what a piece of shit. They threw no money at it.
What about Inhumans? Did we all forget about Inhumans?
We've tried. I did a good job up until now.
Inhumans, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had... The thing is, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. brought back Ghost Rider. They had, I think, Deathlok. Like, there was so much stuff that hopefully they just write it all off. I just want it to be, like, retconned. We don't need S.H.I.E.L.D., Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It went on for way too long.
7 seasons.
But Hawkeye, highly recommend it. Again, it feels nothing like Loki, feels nothing like WandaVision, feels nothing like Captain America and Winter Soldier. This is a completely different feeling show, different vibe, different, you know, way to look at superheroes. The bad guys are not super at all, which is good because Hawkeye doesn't really have powers. Kate Bishop doesn't really have powers. So it's a nice, you know, it's very much like a Deadpool, a Daredevil, or a, you know, Jessica Jones. And that's why I get the Netflix vibe. I think people who love the Netflix shows will like this. I'm curious to see where it goes. And, you know, I again, recommend it to everybody.
Yeah, I'm super psyched on it. I'm looking forward to Friday. Another episode.
Now, Chucky, Child's Play, the recent remake of it, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I recommend it to everybody. I think we reviewed it on the show. One of the best adaptations I have seen, like, not even adaptation, revamp, reboot ever. Like, I loved it so much. And rather than give us a second movie, we get a TV show. How's that? How does that work?
You know, I think that for all intents and purposes, what they did with Chucky in that movie was very good, right? I don't know that I would have been psyched to see a sequel, because Chucky is very much like a, and don't murder me, Chucky, wherever you are, but he's very much a small screen villain. Like, you got a lot of juice out of the orange with Chucky back with like Child's Play 1, Child's Play 2, but that's the kind of thing that's going to go a little long in the tooth on the big screen. But on, as a TV show, where you have longer storytelling and he could actually just be a serial killer and you could watch people's lives unravel around the character, it's awesome. Like, I watched the first episode, I started watching the second, and I paused it and I said, Sally, I think you're going to really like this. I'm going to wait to watch the rest with you, because I know that I could have binged this easy. I know that, like, I could have started it and been done in 2 days with it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where they go with this too on TV. I mean, obviously the slasher slaughter violence and gore on sci-fi is not quite as prevalent as it would be in a movie. But I feel like the last Child's Play movie was almost kind of like a spoof on Child's Play. I mean, first of all, I love the fact that the gimmick was that he wasn't possessed by a serial killer who transferred his soul using the Satanic Bible into a doll. He was actually just a like hacked Alexa, or, you know, like hacked Teddy Rumpkin with AI, which is like more Terminator than it is satanic cult. I love all that. I love how it ties into current, you know, technology. Obviously, I'm in the tech industry, so that's cool. But I also like that he's funny. So I'm very curious to see how they where they go on the TV show. I'm very happy that Sci-Fi is doing something well with a source material that I really appreciate. It is a show that is tough for me to watch because I can't watch it with Gabe, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but Gabe is terrified of puppets.
It's so funny what he is choosing, and I'm not saying choosing, because you can't say what a person chooses to be afraid of anything. But I feel like it's kind of selective with him, because like he'll watch Nightmare Before Christmas, he'll watch Venom, he watches all this other stuff. But man, you put a puppet or a doll in front of that kid, it's meltdown town.
Obsessed with Venom. He watched Venom 2 from start to finish, and just was just so happy, like just ear to ear, grinning, laughing every time the Venom voice came out. Like, he loves it. He loves Nightmare Before Christmas. He loves spooky, and he loves Halloween. He is terrified of puppets, and to the point where yesterday I was helping my parents bring down the Christmas stuff from their attic, because they have one of those attics with the trap door where, like, you do the trap door and the staircase comes down. It doesn't walk up like ours. So I had to help them because they're old. And we pull down the boxes. My mom is, like, kind of obsessed with holidays. Like, every holiday needs to have, like, 50 blow-ups on the front lawn. So I'm pulling down all this stuff, and one of the boxes is marked Porch Kids. And I go, hey, Mom, here's the Porch Kids. And Gabe goes, no, put them back upstairs right now. No Porch Kids. I go, what are the Porch Kids? And I open up the box, and it's like a pair of like puppets on a stick type front porch kids. Like, it's like,
oh boy,
it's puppet looking things, even though they're not actual puppets. And he's like, no, back upstairs now. So I have to pack them back up, send them to my dad. My dad does not understand why I'm returning a Christmas box. I'm like, don't even put them up. Why put them up? Then you have to deal with him upset about puppets and the Porch Kids. So, you know, and then my mom's like, but you like Pumpkin Boy, and Pumpkin Boy is basically a porch kid with a pumpkin head. He's like, yeah, that's because he's spooky.
Watches Venom bite a dude's head off, doesn't bat an eye, but you show him one puppet. You know, in fairness, though, I got to get his back on this, because I remember, like, you know, I'm 4 years older than my brother. So my brother, he had a My Buddy doll, right? Oh. So My Buddy dolls, they came out in like 86, 85 maybe. Yep. And so I remember like seeing the first Child's Play movie at a buddy's house like 3 or 4 years later. And like, you know, he was the buddy who had HBO, so he taped everything. So we went over there. I mean, at the time I watched it, I maybe like, too young to be watching Child's Play. And also, like, I was always very frightened of these movies. So, like, I couldn't get all the way through it and I had to leave because I told you the Tremors story. I had to leave Tremors to go see Little Mermaid. But, you know, I watched a bit of it, saw Chucky, and I was like, I don't know, this is not for me. And I went home and then I'm walking around, I'm messing around in the house, and I stumbled upon my brother's My Buddy doll, and I almost shit my pants because, like, you know, for those listening at home who might not be familiar with the My Buddy doll, My Buddy is an equally scary but less homicidal Chucky that came out maybe 3 or 4 years before the movie did, before the first Child's Play in the 80s. So if you Google it, get ready for the nightmare fuel. And if you know what I'm talking about, I'm sorry for sending you in the Wayback Machine because, ooh.
I love how everybody is using the true crime podcaster gimmick right now. This isn't the first thing we've watched where it's Ghostbusters is a true crime podcaster on there too. Like
the kid's called Podcast.
Yeah, and there's also one in the Chucky show. I find that hilarious. I feel like the build up at first is largely so you understand who the new characters are. It does feature, you know, teenage kids, and you know it is kind of juvenile in that. I don't know if juvenile is the right word, but it is kind of like more like a high school story rather than adults being slaughtered. I also find this show to be a little bit more weird than some of the other ones. But I mean, how could you not be weirded out by a little Chucky? Because, you know, you think about it. At the end of the day, it's like you can punt kick Chucky. There's no reason why Chucky can kill you if it's not by surprise. It just doesn't make sense. So this show does play on some of the weirdness. I mean, if you don't like Child's Play, and I know there's a lot of people who just cannot buy into Child's Play, you probably won't like this. If you do like Child's Play and you like weird television, weird kind of spooky television, this is for you. If you're deathly afraid of puppets and animatronic creatures like Teddy Rumpkin or My Buddy, yep, you might want to pass on this. So that's how I feel about Chucky.
I agree. I agree with all these points. And like I said, I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to binging the rest of it this weekend because I was like, I was watching it today before I went to work and I was like, oh, you know, I could probably watch another episode, right? And I'm like, no, gotta wait. And you gotta go to work because, you know, bills.
Yeah, I know all about the bills. I know all about them. I am right now very cautiously watching how the world is turning with this new freaking variant of COVID because I'm like, okay, so am I going to be traveling at the end of the year? Am I not? Should I be booking travel? Should I not be? Should I be scheduling interviews? I have no idea. So again, we are back to this point again, which is not fun at all. However, I am also... I don't know where I was going. I was going somewhere with this. I was going somewhere and then I got lost in a sea of sadness and I'm not going to Venom though. I was steering. Oh yes, I was going to Venom. So you know what made me happy though? I was very happy when I got the press release today about Iron Maiden and Marvel forming a partnership for hopefully a long line of merch, maybe some comic books, maybe some crossovers. Iron Maiden has reached an agreement with Marvel Comics to, you know, do a whole bunch of homages / team-ups almost between Eddie and Iron Maiden and the Marvel Universe. So right off the gate, they released a whole bunch of limited shirts, including a Fear of the Dark Venom shirt. That's pretty awesome. I think it's a Christmas sweater. They have a version of the Samurai from the new Iron Maiden album with Wolverine. It's almost like a Silver Samurai mashup. There is a Deadpool doing Somewhere in Time. There is a really cool Eddie in Marvel comic book format. It is so awesome. I'm so happy to see where they go with this. And I love the fact that Marvel even thinks that Iron Maiden, who is, you know, a whole bunch of 60-plus-year-old men, are still relevant to today's kids, that they're willing to give them a shot with something like this. So I'm very happy to see this this come to fruition.
I mean, dude, let's be real. It's fucking Iron Maiden. Everybody loves Iron Maiden.
Yeah, look.
That's my whole argument.
I'm so happy because, like, you know, we talked about it recently. How many of the bands that we loved when we were kids are still relevant today and not just throwback acts? Iron Maiden, it will never be a throwback act, and I do appreciate that. And again, they have this mascot, this mythology that so lends itself to comic books. And, you know, definitely picked up one or two of those and want to see what else they put out. I know Iron Maiden did a thing with Tokidoki a while back at Comic Cons where they had like covers of albums redone in Tokidoki style. But those were really more like, you know, trying to reach the Urban Outfitters sect. This is definitely way cooler. And again, I can't wait to see what else they put out.
Yeah. And I think from what I gather, certain of the shirts are available at ironmaiden.com and certain shirts are available other places.
Yeah. And I haven't seen the ones that are available elsewhere. I saw all the ones that are available at ironmaiden.com today. It's possible other stuff might be coming out in like Hot Topics and other outlets.
Well, there's a Carnage one that's the cover of Killers. That's what I was looking for.
Oh, I did not see that.
And then there is a Wolverine, the cover of Wolverine with Eddie Snicked, which is awesome. But I don't know where that's going to be because I don't want to go buy that one.
I'm psyched for these. I'm very happy. Also, I've become obsessed with lightsaber hilts. Recently, it went to...
How many did you buy?
Oh, too many. So Disney, Shop Disney for Black Friday, decided to release the Luke Skywalker, the Darth Vader, and the Samuel L. Jackson one. I forgot what his name is right now. The Mace Windu lightsabers on their Shop Disney app. And these are usually only available in the Disneyland Galaxy's Edge, and I did maybe grabbed all of them. But, you know, it's awesome, and now I have lightsabers. And, of course, I had to get Gabe matching ones for Christmas, too. So he's got, like, the baby ones, and it's going to be wonderful.
Oh, little guy lightsabers. I love it.
We also watched Home Alone with him. So we are building... building the Home Alone house. So we started building the Lego Home Alone house. And he loves it. So we do a bag every night and he sits down at the dining room table and he plays with the minifigures and whatever I've built so far. And I'll make him maybe like hold the windows or something. Like I'll be like, here's all your parts given me when I call him out. And we're building the Home Alone house. But like he didn't know what this was. He didn't quite understand why we had this house. It came with this like plumbing truck. And there's like a guy who has a weird red mark on his face as one of the minifigures. So I'm like, Gabe, we need to watch Home Alone. So he's like, I want to watch Home Alone. So we watched it last night. He was glued as if it were venom. He saw Kevin. He knew who Kevin was. And he's just like, when does the magic happen? And we watched the whole thing. He absolutely was glued to the TV. I'm so happy he appreciated it. He loved the stunts at the end. I also forgot that it takes like an hour and 10 minutes before we get to any of the like you know, the them breaking into the house, which is hilarious. And he now gets it. So we're built today. We sat down to build a little bit more. And we built the part where we have the Michael Jordan stand up on the train and spinning around in the living room. And we built a Christmas tree with all the ornaments on the floor. And it was great seeing him get it.
I mean, it's great until he figures out how to set traps for you around the house.
So we made it very clear, both me and his mother, the whole movie, we're like, you do not do these. You do not shoot people with a gun. You do not light you just don't do any of this. And we will never forget you. As long as we promise we will never forget you at home if you promise not to do anything you see in this movie. Anything. He understood. He's not a mean kid, so I don't think he ever would do any of that, but... so there's that. So let's loop this all back to Let There Be Carnage. Venom 2 is now available on demand everywhere. You can buy it from Apple or, you know, Apple iTunes or wherever you want to get your movies. And we watched it. And let me tell you, buddy, I as you know, I'm the only person in the world who enjoyed Venom 1. And I also watched it again because Allison said she couldn't watch Venom 2 without seeing Venom 1. She had never seen it. So we watched it as well. And Venom 1 is as I remember it to be, little nuggets of sunshine amongst a pretty terrible movie.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that I'm a little less harsh on it now because after seeing Venom, you know, seeing Venom 2 and thinking about it, like, I think they just presented it wrong and they didn't lean enough in either direction to make Venom 1 great. Whereas in number 2, they knew what they were doing and they knew what they wanted to do. And they made it a much better movie because they leaned into everything they should have.
They took the little nuggets of gold from the first one, buried them in the backyard, watered them, nurtured them, gave them that dirt that has like the special nutrients and made it an amazing, amazing movie. At least as far as you can get with a movie that's not actually in the MCU or have Spider-Man in it. They took all the funny stuff out of the first one and really expanded on it. They made it a buddy cop movie. They made it enjoyable, exciting, fun, and action-packed. Plus, the key thing that sucked about the first movie, the bad guy is significantly better in this movie.
Oh, 100%.
Like, the bad guy just didn't work. I always hate the snarky scientist bad guy who, like, somehow gets powers and then he's bad. I just always hate it. I hate the fake Elon Musk bad guy. It just doesn't work. And the bad guy was also a fake Venom. Like, it just wasn't good. In this case, it was Carnage. It was Carnage, and it was Shriek, and it was, and it's Venom, and it's Eddie Brock, and it's the symbiote jumping out into other people, too. So it's like, it's a love story. It's a falling apart story. It's a rekindling story. There are so many good little stories in this. And yes, it is not as good as some of the superhero movies we might have grown to love, but it's fun, and it's an hour and a half long, and I just loved everything about it.
Yeah, I definitely think that they did a much, 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 much better job this time around. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. There is nothing worse than a scientist being the villain of the movie that, like, it's lazy because you feel like you have to, like, tell a, you know, an origin story of some kind because no one would be ready to get to the fan favorite character that everybody already knows. Like, yeah, I get it. Maybe not everyone knows Venom or understands Venom, but, like, in the end of the day, dude, it's called Google. People are like, oh, let me see what this is. And they're going to see this badass looking monster in Carnage and be like, oh, wow, I want to see that. And then they're going to be made to wait a whole movie in several years before that happens. It's lazy.
Look, it is lazy. Also, the reason why I hate DC and why DC is some of the worst comic books ever in the history of comic books and worst characters is because all the bad guys are psychopaths. And the reason why Marvel is so great is because every single bad guy is multidimensional. Everyone has a heart. You understand why they're doing it. It's not just Cobra Commander trying to ruin the world to ruin the world. It is literally, these are just broken people. Even Thanos is like the level of storytelling and the level of caring. Well, in this one, you have Woody Harrelson, who is, you know, even though he is a psychopath and he is a serial killer, like, it's because he's come from a broken home, and they even flesh that out, and Shriek is good. Again, not to the level of the Marvel stuff and the MCU, but still, it's not a one-dimensional, lame, like, I am just a sociopath, psychopath, I want to kill everybody. Look at me, I'm the Joker or Bane or any fucking horrible DC bad guy.
So I'm not going to get into it with you right now because DC does actually have some really great villains. I know you are very anti-DC, and I will give it to you. In the movies, as of late, everyone is pretty one-dimensional. That being said, I definitely agree that they did pick a better villain this time with Carnage. They have a merchandise machine ready to rock and roll because people are going to love this movie. I thought the FX team did a great job with this movie as well. I want to see another one. I want to see where they go with it. I'm interested to see where they go with it because they just were whispering about today that Tom Holland is probably going to do Spider-Man 4, 5, 6.
Why did we think that? I've said this in our group chats a million times. Stop with the fake news. We all knew this was going to happen.
But we didn't say it on air.
But we knew.
It doesn't count if we don't say it on air.
We knew. No one ever thought Tom Holland was not going to come back for another movie. Yes, they made it clear that there's a trilogy. The trilogy's over. They're starting a new trilogy. Tom Holland will be part of it. I just hate fucking all those bad blogs. I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
Well, anyway, I'm very excited to see where it goes now that, like, you know, there could be potential for Venom. But it also, like, as you just said that comment before about the scientist thing, it made me worried about Morbius because I'm like, oh, that they probably will do, like, the jobber scientist villain of Morbius, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I know nothing about Morbius other than I like the trailer I saw, so we'll see where that goes. I got to say this. I'm not going to spoil much, but look, before you see Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man movie, please watch Venom. You know, there might be something in the stinger that maybe you should watch. Like that, I'll leave it there. Most of you know this already, but, you know, I feel like something is going to happen that either is going to tie into the next Spider-Man movie or the end of the Spider-Man movie. Regardless, I think everybody should watch this. I think it's funny. I got to say one thing that I truly love.
Sure.
What took this movie to the next level, which made it some of the best writing I've ever seen, something that DC could never, ever do, or Warner Brothers or any of that shit. Pretty much any movie out there where you are the hero and you're an anti-hero and you lost your girlfriend and your girlfriend finds another man, be it like the dude from the Money Pit with the long blonde hair who also played Hans Gruber or something. I don't know, that guy, right? Like any guy who is the follow-up to your girl when she leaves you is usually either evil, bad, lame, or he sucks, or he's just like gonna die in the movie. In this movie, his name is Dan. Remember his name, people. His name is Dan, and Dan saves the day over and over and over again. Like, they're in like a fucking burning church or something, and Dan is fucking showing up, showing out. No powers, no fucking symbiote. Dan is kicking all the ass. Dan is rules. And at the end, Venom acknowledges it. When Eddie's trying not to give him props, Venom's like, fucking fist bump, Dan. I love that. I have never seen that in a movie before.
I'm just going to say this because I'm glad you brought Dan up. Dan was my favorite part of the movie. I think that if Michelle Williams ends up single after this movie, it's not because she was wooed back to Eddie Brock by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that Dan was really not looking to have to do what Dan did to save the damn day. So if anything, Dan is smart enough to leave her.
Dr. Dan Lewis, played by Reed Scott, is the best character in this movie. And that's not making fun of the movie. It's just some great writing. Like, whoever was in the writer's room was like, no, don't make Dan lame. Like, we know the plot. We've done it a million times. It's always that if the girlfriend gets a new boyfriend, the boyfriend's either dead, evil, or sucks. And in this case, they just completely flipped the script. He was like, he's a doctor. He's really nice. He's really like a good guy. And then he kicks ass when he needs to. And he's the only one without any sort of weird power. I loved it. And I was like, I kept telling to Allison, I'm like, Dan is the best. And I was waiting for something to twist, and they did it. And they followed through all the way to the end when Venom like gives Dan props. I loved it. I thought that was just, it showed that the people who wrote this movie actually cared about the movie and not just churning out another dumb, like, cash-in. So everything about Let There Be Carnage is an upgrade from the first movie. It is a really good action movie. It is a great buddy cop movie. Venom is funny. Everything here. It is a silly, over-the-top action movie. Yes, it is. Does it steer heavily away from the original mythology? Yes, which you can't do without Secret Wars. And that wasn't going to happen. But Woody Harrelson's great in it. Like, all the actors in this are great. You do have, it's just, I loved it. I cannot say enough about this. Yes, I did like Venom 1 as well. But I saw Venom 1 way after everyone else did. John saw in the movies. I did not. I had heard all the bad reviews. I went in with such low expectations. So I enjoyed it because it wasn't as bad as people made it out to me. They were upset because there was no Spider-Man in it. And it was, it tried to be more of an action movie and the bad guy sucked. This does not. I loved it. I highly recommend it. What do you think?
I loved it. I think it's a different movie. It's a very different movie than the first one. I think if you like the first one, you're going to love this movie. If you didn't like the first one, you're still going to love this movie. Like, I think you should watch it. It really does stand on its own. I would totally recommend people to see this movie. It is fun.
I also don't think you need to see the first movie to see this movie if you have any understanding of the Venom character. Like, if you know who Venom is and what Venom does, skip the first movie altogether. If you don't know anything about Venom, you might need to watch it, but it's not really necessary if you're like at all familiar with the mythology, or if you've seen any of the Spider-Man movies that Venom in it previously. That's all the origin movie you need.
Exactly. And watch it. I honestly, it's good. Hashtag Team Dan.
Yeah, Team Dan. I'm so into, and so refreshing to see an hour and a half superhero movie. Like, it's all major bloated stuff these days. And I'm just like, give me something I can just digest and enjoy. And this is it. I'm so glad it's doing gangbusters in the movies. I mean, it might have beaten Eternals and Shang-Chi. Like, it's doing so well. And hopefully that gives them the impetus to put it in the MCU proper. And, this is the version of the Venom I like. This is not the one from Spider-Man 3. I don't even know if he was an amazing Spider-Man, but like, this is actually one. This one in Let There Be Carnage is the best version of Venom ever.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm hoping that he shows up in a Spider-Man movie, because I think it would be great, especially with the way Spider-Man is in the MCU, to have Tom Holland, Venom, and Spider-Man playing off each other.
Yeah, and I also feel like I don't need them to go rewrite the original version of it. Like, I know they're working towards a Secret Wars, from what everybody's saying, with where they're going with this whole phase of the Marvel Universe, but I don't know if I need the symbiote, which was a side story. Basically, if anybody doesn't know, it's Spider-Man was fighting in space with a whole bunch of other Marvel superheroes against major bad guys, and his costume gets ripped to shred, and you find a little, like, bug, this little creature, this little cute little creature. He's like, oh, I'll be your costume. I'm a little creature. And he thinks he's putting on a costume, but it's really, like, an alien. It's an alien bug, and it's, like, kind of, like, you know, addicting, and it slowly, like, becomes him. It's a symbiote. It, like, you know, takes your soul or something like that. I can't quite figure out what symbiotes are, but they try to absorb him, and he, like, forces away, and it goes to the next obvious person, which is another photojournalist who just got fired from the Daily Bugle, and that would be Eddie Brock. And then Eddie Brock, just like, who's naturally a bad person, starts like becoming badder. I don't need that story. This one's perfectly fine. I'm ready for more of this Venom. I mean, this Venom and Deadpool would be so fucking hilarious.
Oh my God. You know what that movie would do, George?
Money.
That movie print would money. Print money.
Print money. Print money. And it could happen now. And I think there is a world where we could see that. I also don't think this Venom was R. If I'm right, this was not an R-rated movie. I mean, there was.
No, I think they only got one F-bomb and they used it so well.
It was, at the very end. And I love that. Yeah, it's a PG-13 movie, but it didn't feel like a PG-13 movie. It was as violent as it needed to be. The, you know, Venom eats a couple heads. There's a lot of chickens in this movie. It's just funny slapstick that I didn't need to be there. It was non sequitur humor, which is my kind of humor. If anybody knows me, I'm a big fan of weird humor. And this is right there with it. So, highly recommend Let There Be Carnage. I think we talked about this more than we talked about any other movie we saw this week. But, you know, what did Sally think of it?
She really enjoyed it. And we had a good time with it. Love the scene where he goes to the rave, essentially, and starts talking about his feelings.
Yes, yes. Ugh. We got all emo. I mean, that's what I loved about the first one. That just that line. I think what made it for me was strictly that line where he's like, "You're a loser, Eddie. And I am a loser, too, on my planet. That's why I'm going to stay here and hang out with you." Which is basically that one joke is like the entire premise of this movie.
Exactly. And there's a lot to be said about that, right? And then, you know, you have a couple different things at play here. And we're going to keep talking about Venom because fuck it. It's great. You know, Tom Hardy worked on the story for Venom, too, because he loves the character that much. So this is a person who really loves and gets the character and wants to keep playing the character, who is invested in making sure that this thing works. And I think that there's a very big difference between the way the first one was written and the way that this one was written, because it really is a buddy cop, like, you know how you hate the man-child movies?
Yes.
Right. So this is, for all intents and purposes, in a lot of ways, a man-child movie. We have two really messed up dudes, and they have to find a way to come together in the end to, like, save the day.
No, so, I disagree. I have to disagree. This is not man-child. I'm sorry.
Total man-child.
No. You're confusing man-child with, like, bro dude. Like, I think this is more like a guy who's just a narcissist, and you know, he thinks he's bigger than he is. He's a bad he's like a B-list blogger for, like, TMZ. I don't think he's a man-child. I think he's just a loser. I think Venom is correct. I feel no man children is when you, like, you can't confuse, like, I can't say Billy Madison is the same thing as Eddie Brock here.
I don't think it's that far off, man. I know you hate man child movies. I'm not trying to ruin this movie for you.
You can't say, like, a man child can afford the apartment that Eddie Brock has. I just think he, like, thinks he's cooler than he is. And the fact is, I don't like Tom Hardy as an actor. I'm going to just say it outright. Like, Tom Hardy is, like, I'm sorry, Bane, fucking Mad Max, the one where he doesn't talk, so he's, like, in a gimp outfit on the front of a freaking truck. Like, the guy is not the most, you know, his depth isn't deep. It's more just whatever. I think this is the perfect movie for him because he's basically playing himself, and that's what you get. I don't know. It's like, do you like Tom Hardy as an actor? Does he, like, hit your spots?
Yes and no. It depends on what he's in. Like, I loved him in Mad Max. I loved him in this. I thought, like, he was great in this. It's funny because I hated him in Batman as Bane.
I think everyone.
It could have been anyone under that mask, but you know what I mean. Like, I think that it changes from movie to movie because it depends on how deep in the character he goes.
I mean, I also didn't love the movie that everybody told me how to watch. Remember, I started this year off and I was going to do that haul. I'm going to watch every what movie?
A23
movie. And then I made it to his movie where he's in the car by himself, Locke, where he's just in the car by himself on the phone trying to do something. And I was just bored out of my fucking mind. People call it a masterpiece. I was not a fan of it. I'm not, again, not the biggest Tom Hardy fan, but this movie works for him because I feel like Tom Hardy in real life is Eddie Brock.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I feel good about that.
You know, I mean, it's like maybe Ryan Reynolds is a little bit of that Deadpool. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going. I'm ranting right now. How can the kids reach you?
You can find me on the Twitter, on Instagram, and now on TikTok, apparently, at John McGuire RPG. I'm tweeting more. I'm taking photos of stuff. And
you're
like
dancing. I can't believe you're dancing on TikTok.
I'm not dancing. I don't
dance.
Dude,
I saw the dance. I saw when you did
I do not dance.
You do, like, I love Jesus, and I love my kids. Liar. And my cats.
Liar.
And, I don't know.
TikTok. I'm just really trying to promote for my Kickstarter, which by the time you listen to this episode, the Kickstarter will be over. Thankfully, no more like constant barrage of promotion for me, but until the next one. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and on TikTok at John McGuire RPG. George, where can the kids find you?
Do you find that you're managing the stress of a Kickstarter better? Like, is this one, like this one did, like you're good now. You could do another one. You could do a Kickstarter every month now.
Hell, fuck no. I can do a Kickstarter twice a year, and that's a lot.
Because I couldn't do it. I got to be honest with you. I couldn't do it. Like, I would just be like, fuck it. I'll fund it myself. Like, I just couldn't. I would not be able to handle the stress of having to constantly refresh and see if someone else has bought one. Like,
well, it's you know, you get to a point where you don't do that as much. Like, in my video today, I'm like constantly refreshing because it's the last 48 hours. But like the real grind of it all is constantly promoting. Like, I did a shitload of podcasts. I did like a couple actual plays. I did a podcast where we played the thing. Like, I did interviews. Like, I was constantly putting out different ads to keep people's attention and trying to build engagement to keep people looking at my shit when they were tired of looking at my shit. So like, I've been, you know, two and a half weeks before the thing kicked off, I was promoting getting people to get ready for when it kicks off. It's been a 4-week promotion cycle for me on top of that. So I'm at like 7 weeks of promotion here, man. That's the fucking hard part.
Yeah, like, I am here for you if you need anything. I feel you. It's almost like we need like Kickstarter recovery for Kickstarter people.
You know what? Yeah, a spa day. You know what you need?
A spa day.
Put your fucking phone down, get a cucumbers in your eyes, and like go get a rub down because holy fuck, it's a lot of work.
Chocolate fondue. That's all I'd want. It's chocolate fondue. Like, someone roll a chocolate fondue machine over to me and give me some bananas and strawberries.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
It's been a week. You can reach me at GLK Creative on Instagram and GLK Creative on Twitter. I have been flooding the world with George Talks Tech lately. I mean, we've been doing this the historical figure thing. I just picked the perfect gift for Nikola Tesla. We have another one coming out, I think, on Thursday. You know, stay tuned to find out who I pick a gift for. Then we got another one coming out tomorrow, which will be yesterday. If this is Thursday, forget it. Don't even try to figure that out. Where I will be showing off the new soundbars, and that's where I'm going to be spoofing the new Maxell commercial. You will love it. Everybody check that out. You can find us at MyTieTV.com. That's our whole back catalog, all our episodes, including the original video episodes. You can... Oh, hey, Gabe's here. Gabe,
hey, buddy. Up.
What's up? Say hi to everybody. Come on, quickly. Run over here. Come over here. Tell us what you think of Home Alone.
Awesome.
Who's your favorite person on Home Alone?
All of them.
All of them? You love Kevin? Do you want me to leave you home alone? No, I'll go to France and leave you here. Would you be able to handle yourself? Would you be able to go to the supermarket? No. If I ever accidentally leave you home, you go next door to Art and you say, Art and Marcia, let me in. I don't know what happened, but that's what you need to do, okay? Promise me? We played through the song. It was something that John said I would never do. We played through the song. Hey, okay, you can rate, review, and subscribe. We love you. Love, show us the love. I don't know. Take us out.
Everybody remember, be nice. Treat yourself right when you're treating other people right this holiday season. Get vaccinated. If you already need to get vaccinated, you get the booster as well, because the vaccination of the booster is going to help you. Wear a mask indoors. Socially distance when you need to. You know, all that fun stuff. We say it every week, but it's honest to goodness true. Just take care of yourself, everybody. Be nice. Aloha.
Aloha. La 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 la.